Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talebi, and joining me in studio this evening are Mark Dutoy from Courtney Capital Private Wealth and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. You can SMS 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at Business Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Mark, Wayne, nice to see you both this evening. Wayne, if I may start with you, good day on the markets. Everyone seems to be very excited about the potential, presidency, the ECB presidency of Christine Lagarde, which they think is great for bond markets, great for dovish monetary policy, and it's off to the races.
Well, I suppose it's great that she'll be taking over there, but the underlying economy is not good, and that's why she's great, because she's going to throw a lot of money at it.
Yes, so it's not actually that great.
No, I mean, it's actually been sitting, effectively been sitting for 10 years, the European economy, more or less. It's been sitting. Yeah. And they've had their own challenges with... what were they called again? The pigs.
Yeah, Portugal, Ireland,
Italy,
Greece, and Spain.
So I mean, but the Europe, it's not quite Japan 3 decades, but it's not that far off for the last decade, and they've put serious cash into it. I mean, German bonds are negative, as we all know.
I mean, I think the number for the amount of negative yielding bonds is $13 trillion. Is that possible?
Could easily be that big, yeah.
Mark, but is that good for us, for our rand? So if all these yields are going to zero or beyond, in other words, negative, people will look for yields, and therefore they'll go into the rand, which is possibly why we're flirting with 14 to the dollar again.
So certainly. I mean, it's a relative value play. I mean, the rand, you're getting 8% on government bonds. And you can borrow at negative 2% in some of the... I think even Italy's got negative bond yields now.
I mean, you know, let's face it, that's
you won't talk anymore about Italy because it's a delicate subject on this program.
Yeah, but I think what it means for us is potentially we can get a rate cut here in South Africa, which, in my opinion, we desperately need to get our economy kind of moving in a positive direction again.
Yeah, okay, so...
look, I think a rate cut is coming. Inflation looks all right. Global rates are going down. I think a rate cut's coming soon.
Yeah. Well, there's a question. I've somewhat discombobulated. It was your comments on Italy, and actually all I could think about forthcoming visit there and the salami and cheese that I was going to be buying. So I went.
But look, we have noticed operator error before on that computer over the years.
Yes. We can't blame the computer. Okay. There are a couple of questions. So if we move aside from big global themes to what's happening specifically locally, the headline of this email is bottom feeding. And it says... Altron was a good bottom feed in the mid-cap sector. Any other surprises out there, potentially?
Look, bottom feeder is another thing. You can call it value investor. Is you try and find companies that have fallen on tough times, but fundamentally it's not a bad business, or they're restructuring the business, etc., etc. And as an investor, you feel like a hero when you catch the bottom feeder there. But it's not as easy as it sounds. The biggest single mistake, and my advice to anyone trying to bottom feed, is identify something. Okay? You say, well, this company looks good, you know, longer term, blah, blah, blah. Put the idea in your diary for 3 years' time before you buy it.
Really?
Yeah, because you see every single value investor buys these things way too early. Look at the platinum shares. Lots of people piled in because they recognized value. They recognized this. It will survive. There is demand, etc., etc. You know, they buy 3 years too early. I mean, as you well know with me,
and
I bought Kumba too early.
And then you tie up capital.
And then you lose 50%. But if you hang in there, you make five times, as has happened with platinum. Mm. But it's do it with a small proportion of your portfolio, because it's not as easy as it looks.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the theory towards bottom feeding. Mark, I mean, have you identified any opportunities that you may now go home and stick into your diary and in 3 years' time have a look at again?
So, I mean, I agree with Wayne. I mean, it really kind of tests your investment thesis sometimes, because you think this stock looks good and it looks cheap, but, you know, it goes down another 30% before it starts going up. I think for the viewer's question, you know, you can look at kind of the companies that Value Capital Partners have taken stakes in. So they, two of the ex-Brait executives, made a lot of money and are now investing, getting a seat on a board, and kind of identifying the value opportunities in the South African space. So the ones that come to mind are Mete. I know they've got a stake in PPC, Grand Parade.
Yeah,
so perhaps that's a place to start.
And also Adcorp. But therein, that exactly confirms Wayne's thesis. So Adcorp has done, they've done really, you know, they went in there, they shifted management, they strengthened the board, Adcorp, you can see the benefits of that. The share prices rallied significantly.
Yeah.
Altron was the same. But PPC, you could argue, maybe they went in too soon, because I think, I mean, their assumption, or their assertion rather, is that the share is worth closer to 10 Rand, which PPC is still quite far off.
There are many classic cases. SAP is a classic case. I mean, that thing almost went bankrupt, and I forget how many rights issued they had to save the company. So you tested your metal as a value investor to go in there, because you had tough years before it actually turned. Then another classic example is the building and construction industry 4 years ago. You said, we still need them. You know, we still, and they've fallen on tough times, and the shares have been decimated. Classic value, and it turns out to be a value trap, because by and large they've all disappeared and in business rescue, and the value for shareholders is a fat zero. You know, so in other words, a value investor has terrible 4 years, and then a wonderful 1 year where they make up for the other 4 years. But it, as you have
but
many
you need
sleepless
fortitude.
Nights.
Yeah. What about a company like Afrimat? You know, Mark, they came. I mean, this has been a very canny player in the areas in which it operates. It was construction materials, and it went into iron ore at exactly the right time.
Yeah.
And now it's walked away from a coal acquisition. Mm. So, and the shares were up quite nicely today. I mean, this is a, I don't know, is Afrimat, I guess, would still count as a small cap or heading towards mid-cap status.
So, I mean, the management of Afrimat, they've really been solid over the years, and they have a very good reputation, particularly for doing these types of deals. I mean, they built their reputation on taking over kind of family-owned quarries, and they were able to get the necessary licenses involved to carry on with the operation, and, you know, businesses that were struggling, and when they took them over, they were able to extend their lives and turn the businesses around. And they really got their timing on the iron ore project. I mean, you couldn't have timed it better.
Yeah.
So that that business is going to be throwing off a lot of cash now with this iron ore price. And I think also credit to them for walking away from a deal. They didn't give a reason why they walked away, but I mean, I think it's in an environment where we've seen so many companies just kind of doing acquisitions for the sake of it, I think it's refreshing to see a management team walk away.
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, when they announced the deal, there was a skepticism then, and Andries van Heerden said, well, we really think the coal sector is a great sector to be in. You know, they had a very strong
idea.
But they hadn't actually done the actual due diligence yet. And
But look, the coal price has taken a bit of a walloping worldwide. It hasn't been the best area to have been in the last couple of months. And over time, you would think that coal demand must be on the decline, you know, over long periods of time, because it's been taken over by, you know, alternatives and hydro, and there's all the pollution and everything. So, you know, a 30-year view on coal, you can't be terribly optimistic.
Yeah. Okay. So, good call there. Then there's a question on the two overseas shares saying, please ask the panel their view on the Moscow exchange. I don't know if you. It's grown revenues 15. I may as well mention the question. It's grown revenues 15.5% annually in local currency terms, and despite its formidable competitive positioning and its enviable track record, Moscow Exchange trades at valuation multiples that are lower than all publicly traded exchanges. Further, the company pays nearly all of its net income out as dividends to shareholders, and also C Limited, which is a Southeast Asia e-commerce company. The theory of buying an exchange, okay, if we don't know anything per se about Moscow Exchange.
Yeah, so I mean the big thing is that it's, in most cases, a monopoly. I mean, you normally have one large exchange in an environment. But like we've seen in South Africa, you can have competition enter. So we've just had in South Africa the A2X launch. And although it hasn't really had a large impact on the JSE, there is now a competitor. So there's pricing pressure, and you don't have that kind of monopoly anymore in the environment. I think Russian stocks tend to trade at a much lower multiples because
Because it's Russia.
Yeah, because of largely the political situation there, and I mean, you never know if you truly own the company or not. I mean, the ownership laws are not what they are in other jurisdictions.
Yeah, so they can look incredibly attractively priced, but there's a reason for it.
I mean, maybe take a step back. Investments is not anything more than investigating your opportunity, applying your mind to it, doing your background research, looking at it, deciding yourself. You can take advice from other people, but you must effectively decide yourself as to whether it's right or wrong. And obviously the person's done the work. If they think it's right, buy it. But just don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, because they clearly know a lot more about the Moscow Exchange than what I know about the Moscow Exchange. I just know it's probably driven by the oil price, the exchange in general, because, you know, Russia is oil, essentially.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, but if you've done your work, put 5% in. Put 10% of your money into it. Don't put 90% of your money into it.
Mm. Okay. And what about CE Limited, which is a Southeast Asia e-commerce company? Any thoughts there? I must say, I've never come across this in my travels, which are clearly very limited. So, Luke, apologies.
Yeah.
But we shall move on to a local share, and it is Growth Points. Mark, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that you're getting a good yield in South African bonds. What about South African property companies? The question is, I'd like to know whether Growth Point should in the near future be a hold, buy, or sell, and why, with a one-year forward assumption.
So, I mean, if your assumption is that interest rates are going to come down, which, I mean, is kind of our base case, then the property stocks are looking at good value at these levels. I think we are seeing a lot of flows out of the property sector, which is one of the reasons why that we're sitting with our property companies at such high dividend yields compared to where they used to be. I mean, they were really darling kind of stocks for a long time, and the tide has gone out on them somewhat.
Mm.
So looking a lot better value compared to history and compared to South African bonds, especially if you think the interest rates are coming down. But, you know, you might not kind of see the increase in the capital appreciation in the near term.
And actually, what about the dividends, Wayne? There was a yes. Business Day story, I think, which talked about more companies having to hold more back and that they may have paid out in dividends in order to cover rising operational costs. That's a bit of a catastrophic
cycle. The property industry is not in a good space. But that's why the shares are cheap, obviously. In that your rentals are going up slower than what your expenses are going up. And one of the reasons why the rentals are going up slow is every time you renegotiate a new lease with a tenant, your base rental comes down. So, but that's the economy, in other words.
Yeah.
It's the economy. So if the economy picks up, that problem will also, by and large, dissipate going forward. So that's why they're cheap. One of the reasons why the distributions won't maybe not be as good going forward as what people anticipate is nowadays, if your gearing, if your debt is more than 35% of your asset base, market frowns on that, whereas previously 40%.
Yeah, 40% was considered
the number.
Absolutely fine.
Yeah, now it's 35. So a lot of companies are going to pull back a little bit of cash flows until you get that debt level down. But just putting that aside for the moment, in the current South African environment, if you grow your distribution 1%, you're doing well.
Yeah, and there are some companies doing that. We shall leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions, please do SMS us 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets. On a roll, the S&P up 0.75%, the Nasdaq similarly higher, and the Dow Jones trading almost 1% to the good. So things are quite steamy in the United States. Across the Atlantic, in heat wave struck Europe, the FTSE 100 up 0.33%, the CAC 40 up 0.75%, and the DAX also gaining 0.7%. So we had a pretty lackluster finish if you consider what international markets are doing, closing about 0.25% weaker. And still with me in studio are Mark Du Toit from Courtney Capital Private Wealth and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. Those U.S. markets, any particular factor behind today's rally?
No. Look, this week we're going to get the jobs numbers on Friday, and this is now before the Fed meets at their next meeting. I think it'll be one of the important data points released. If it's very strong, it might put a bit of a dampener on the Fed cutting interest rates, but it's more than likely they are going to cut interest rates. I certainly can't think of any news that came out specifically today to cause that.
Mark, there's a gent I follow on Twitter. His Twitter handle is Downtown Josh Brown. I think it's Ritholtz Wealth, the fund management company. And he tweeted a little bit earlier. He said, "It's the strongest economy ever, so we need to do a rate cut. But also, we should put inflation hawks and gold nuts on the Federal Reserve. And also, I want a weaker dollar immediately." This is literally the economic message from the White House right now.
Yes.
In other words, completely confused.
Well, I mean, they're lucky that they are the strongest economy in the world, and they have a very strong currency, because anywhere else in the world your currency would get completely annihilated with those kind of policies.
But
it's the best place in the world, greatest economy, everything's fantastic, but cut the rates because we need it.
Yes.
So we can push those asset prices higher.
And also we want a weak dollar.
Yeah, so, well, so it's not, mean, the point is it's not unusual.
What, to have a...
For Donald Trump.
No, that's not unusual. Entirely in keeping. I suppose maybe the bigger question for an investor is, what forces are actually going to prevail?
Okay, it's obviously difficult to forecast what's going to happen, but it's relatively easy to put down what the forces are. The U.S. economy is strong, but the growth rate is slowing, and it's slowing quite quickly. Probably won't end in a disaster. But debt levels are high in companies, debt levels are very high in governments, debt levels in consumers are low, so that's the one saving grace. The second saving grace is there's no inflation. It could pick up, especially wage inflation, you don't know, but at the moment there's no inflation, and that's essentially what's saving the rates going up and why there's even talk now about rate cuts.
Yeah.
But understand fundamentally, whether it's 60 or 80%, I don't know, markets are being supported by lower interest rates, not higher economic growth.
And
that's a big difference between the two.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think from our perspective, the markets are looking more risky. I mean, typically in America, they're trading on elevated multiples. And pricing.
How much more expensive are they from their historical norms? Is it completely out of whack out of whack?
No, it's not completely.
It's slightly. I mean, I think it's like two... I mean, it normally trades on about 15, maybe it's trading on a 17 average earnings multiple. So it's not wildly expensive, but the point is it is elevated, and it is already pricing in interest rate cuts. So if there's any kind of change to that outlook, you could see quite a big correction like we saw last year, towards the end of last year.
Or even earlier this year.
Look, last year they were going down because rates were still going up. The moment that changed, they went up, maybe a couple of wobbles. But, you know, they're nowhere near the valuations of 2002 or 2008. So they are over the average. They are looking a little expensive, but they're nowhere near massively overvalued as what we saw.
Yeah, but it does mean that if you buy
your chances of making big bucks from this point must be relatively limited, I would think.
Yeah. Okay, coming back home, and we were talking about bottom feeding. What about Omnia? So the viewer's view is on Omnia as a buy. I'm not sure if they would already be an Omnia shareholder because you're about to get whacked with a massive rights offer. Well, we know the quantum of the rights offer. They need to raise 2 billion rand, but they still haven't actually priced it. Shares are now 31 rand, 12.
I mean, Omnia got it completely wrong. The acquisitions that they've made, they did it at the wrong time, expecting, you know, favorable economy, and which just didn't materialize. And I think that the management team there that's in there now are out of their depth. I mean, when we went to the investor presentation, the CEO's kind of presentation on the results didn't really speak to the severity of the problem. So I wouldn't be buying Omnia until we see major changes there.
And it also seemed at the presentation that they were quite... they sort of fudged the whole issue about the fact that they had said to the market, no, we don't need to raise money, we don't have a debt issue, then swiftly did an about turn, and still haven't actually announced where they will price this rice offer. So
the rice offer is probably going to be priced at this massive discount, same as SAPI did, same as Cardiff people did, to force you to take it. Otherwise, you get so severely diluted.
So what would be a massive... So if we're 31
80%.
Rand, so, okay.
5 rand. 8 rand. What does it matter? You know?
It matters if you're an Omnia shareholder, I suppose.
It matters if you're an Omnia shareholder and you don't take up your rights.
Yeah.
Then it does matter. Clearly it does matter. But look, Omnia might be one of these bottom feeders. Who knows? I wouldn't buy it now. But it's got businesses that will more than likely survive.
But they're all, I mean, they are at the sharpest edges of the
economy. Yeah, they've had a perfect storm.
Which
manufacturing, mining, agriculture.
Yeah, and agriculture.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so both of you take a fairly jaundiced view on Omnia's prospects. What about the panel's view on the rand-dollar exchange rate? Wayne, well, I feel that you are the...
We always tend to
refer to you, especially at times of stress in the rand, and now the rand has strengthened.
Been saying it consistently for a sustained time period. Fair value is somewhere below 14, and we are more or less there now, so the rand is more or less at fair value. It can go to 13, it can go to 13.50, it can go to 15, but understand, and it probably will do all of those at some stage, because that's the rand, but just understand that somewhere below 14, between 13.50 and 14 or wherever, is fair value for the rand. So if the rand goes to 13 or below 13, which it can, you must take money overseas. If it goes to 15, don't panic, wait. So so at least now, with the rand at fair value, you can make a balanced investment decision.
Yeah. As opposed to, Mark, I suppose, not even, 3 weeks ago? Where it was 15.
Yeah.
And then we were starting to panic, but then, it always does this. It blows out, and then it kind of drifts back to where it probably should be trading.
Yeah, I mean, we also like to watch the oil price quite closely because, South Africa imports a lot of oil. So if oil price goes up, then we have to buy more oil, and our currency tends to weaken. So we watch that a bit. I think a lot's going to depend now on whether we get a rate cut or not. Because if we don't get a rate cut, then our currency can strengthen, but then our economy can't grow. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And look, we've got iron, two of our biggest exports, iron ore at $120 a ton. That's very, very good for cash inflows. And the whole PGM basket, that's also a very big exporter of ours. So, there are some other positives flowing into the rand.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But we have, I think, sketched out where the trading range may be. And then a question before we get to stock picks. Could the panel discuss the pros and cons of investing in Redefine? So we did speak about Growthpoint and we did speak about property stocks. Mark, do you have any particular thoughts about Redefine per se?
I mean, Redefine's another stock which is looking cheap. I mean, the dividend yield is high, but I guess what it's telling you is that dividend yield is under pressure. And a bit worried about, the lack of growth in the dividend going forward and perhaps even having to rebase the dividend lower. So it's difficult. I mean, like we're saying, the tide's going out in the property sector, but so the property stocks look cheap, but they could be cheap for a long time.
Mm. I mean, I can't think offhand or off the top of my head what the composition of Redefine's portfolio is, but it does have a lot of offices.
Yeah.
And then some.
It might not be the most well-positioned, but, the yield's very high. And, when last was the property yields above the bond yields, other than maybe for a few months in 2008? I mean, it's literally, is it 15 or 20 years ago that this has happened? Remember all of these... 2 years ago, whenever it was, 2 years ago, all of these things were trading at 7% yields. Now they're trading 9, 10, 11% yields. At 7% yields, everyone wanted property because it was the best performing asset class for the last 10 or 15 years, but only because it went from 9 to 7, now it's gone back to 9, 10, 11.
No one wants them.
And now no one wants them. But if you take, maybe wait 3 years, I don't know, but if you're taking a true long-term view, these things are actually reasonably good value at this level. But understand the next 3 years, your distributions aren't really going to grow.
I mean, I sort of feel that maybe just as a layperson, you want to stop seeing to let signs everywhere.
Look at the economy.
Yeah.
So until that, until you start seeing more properties let out.
But understand that at the moment, everyone's throttled back totally on developments. I mean, there's no new big retailer other than the Fourways redevelopment. There's no new big retail going up anywhere. And other than at the Sandton Gautrain station, there's no new offices going up anywhere. Mm. So when the economy picks up and it grows at, pick a number, 2%, 2.5% for 2 or 3 years, there's no available space. Then your rentals go, then these guys make money again.
Yeah. Okay. So it's probably too soon.
Okay. Very quickly, stock picks. Mark, yours is Anglo-American this evening.
Yes. So, we spoke earlier in the show about interest rates coming down worldwide. The economy's performance, particularly in Europe, being kind of lackluster, in America slowing, but obviously the president wants the economy to grow. So I think the next big kind of theme is going to be infrastructure renewal, and we're starting to see quite a few countries, coming out as a theme. And I think that our diversified miners are well placed to kind of play to that theme. Anglo's already been through a torrid time. Its balance sheet is looking a lot better than it has done in the past. There's not a lot of new mines coming on stream, so the supply is not going to outstrip demand. And I think it's a quality company, and I think it'll do well.
Yeah, okay. So Anglo for Mark. Transaction capital for you, Wayne?
Yeah, a little bit smaller company, but seem to know the industry very well. They seem to be able to transact through thick and thin, up, down economies. The two parts of the businesses are doing nicely.
And you've got
seems
this,
a reasonable valuation.
And I don't think you've got any threat from government with a great public transport system anytime soon. So the taxi operators
guys have got good ideas. They're fully integrated all the way backwards, forwards, up, left, right in the industry. They are the industry. Yeah. And they seem to be operating quite well. I mean, tough industry. I think it's a good few reasons why there aren't any more competitors here, because this is a tough industry, but yeah.
Yeah, canny operators, both. Mark, Wayne, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Mark Detoy is from Courtney Capital Private Wealth. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. Mark, yours is Anglo-American this evening.
Yes. So, I mean, we spoke earlier in the show about interest rates coming down worldwide, the economy's performance, particularly in Europe, being kind of lackluster, in America slowing, but obviously the president wants the economy to grow. So I think the next big kind of theme is going to be infrastructure renewal, and we're starting to see quite a few countries, coming out as a theme. And I think that our diversified miners are well placed to kind of play to that theme. Anglo's already been through a torrid time. Its balance sheet is looking a lot better than it has done in the past. There's not a lot of new mines coming on stream, so the supply is not going to outstrip demand. And I think it's a quality company, and I think it'll do well.
Yeah, okay. So Anglo for Mark. Transaction capital for you, Wayne?
Yeah, a little bit smaller company, but seem to know the industry very well. They seem to be able to transact through thick and thin, up, down economies. The two parts of the businesses are doing nicely.
And you've got
seems
this,
a reasonable valuation.
And I don't think you've got any threat from government with a great public transport system anytime soon. So the taxi operators
guys have got good ideas. They're fully integrated all the way backwards, forwards, up, left, right in the industry. They are the industry, and they seem to be operating quite well. I mean, tough industry. I think there's a good few reasons why there aren't any more competitors here, because this is a tough industry, but yeah.
Yeah, canny operators, both. Mark, Wayne, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Mark Detoy is from Courtney Capital Private Wealth. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening.